time for Hartley's CAT Scan, a weekly podcast featuring the who's who of your Prince George Cougars.
And welcome to CAT Scan. It's brought to you by Prince George Office Systems, custom business solutions for your print, scan, and copy needs on the corner of 5th and George. Born and raised, he is truly from Prince George, and what an illustrious professional hockey career for Stu Malgunas. That included in the juniors playing in the WHL and the Prince George Spruce Kings, Rocky Mountain Junior Hockey League back then, and then moving on to various pro leagues, including the NHL. Well, here you are, Stu, back in the Prince George studios. What a hockey career it was for you. What stands out among all those games for you?
Oh, amongst all those games, how many games was it?
Well, in terms of the NHL, it was 129, but in terms of professional hockey, it's probably all close to the thousands.
Right. That's a tough question. There's just so many things that stand out. Obviously, growing up in PG was every kid's dream to play in the NHL. So I think, you know, maybe my first NHL game, my parents were there watching, and, I had worked so hard to get to that point, you know, being kind of a late bloomer in minor hockey and all that stuff, and then 3 years in the minors where, you know, I thought maybe I was buried. And, finally set foot, that first game in the NHL, something that you've worked for your whole life, was just a yes moment.
All right, let's give us some details. When that was, who you were playing with, who it was against. Give us all the details as we go back in history.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously a long time ago, back in 94. The first game was against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the Spectrum. And, as I said, I had known a couple of days in advance that I was going to get to play in the game. It was the first game of the Flyers season, so flew my parents out there, and I think I didn't start the game, but went out there my first shift, and like I said, as soon as I put that blade on the ice, I just said to myself, yes, I've done it. So I get a little bit emotional, still thinking about it, try not to, and I just remember the puck dropped and I went to hit this first guy, I think it was Paul Fenton or something like that, and mm-hmm. he knocked me right on my ass.
Really?
Wow. and the game was just so fast. It was just amazing how fast it was, and it took a little while to, you know, adjust to that for a few games. I think I did. I had a pretty good rookie season until my knee injury later in the year, which really derailed my career.
Right. And as so often happens with so many athletes that make it on hard work and physical play, injuries can take their toll. You want to just sort of talk about some of those that you had to overcome as you kept playing?
Well, as I just kind of alluded to, near the end of my rookie season in Philadelphia, we were actually practicing in Winnipeg, and it was old school hockey back then, and it was kind of customary for all the guys to go out on the road and stuff like that. You know, it's just what you did. And so we had an early practice the next morning, and I would say, you know, a lot of the guys weren't really at their best, mm-hmm. so to speak. And it was in a dump-in drill, just kind of a forecheck drill. And my defense partner was Rob Ramage at the time. I don't know why I remember that, but, I came around the net with the puck. I just needed to do a simple reverse to Rob Ramage, but I decided I was going to try to skate the puck out of my own end, and I had a forechecker coming from behind and one from the front. And I caught a rut with my left skate and was pushed from behind, and my momentum threw me forward and my skate stayed there. And I tore my ACL, MCL, and all the cartilage in my knee in one shot, and went in for surgery a couple days later. The doctor told my girlfriend at the time that I'd never play hockey again.
Wow, really?
And, he basically said to her, he said, do you want me to tell him or do you want to tell him? And she said, I'll tell him, but she never did.
Right.
And I played another 9 seasons, not as good as I was, but I kept going as best I could.
Did you know at that time how serious it was?
I knew how serious it was, but they kept telling me that, you know, it's in, you know, you can come back from this, and, you know, the trainers, and, you know, trained for basically a year to come back, and Bobby Clark actually pushed me too hard to come back. It was during the lockout, shortened season, and I shouldn't have came back when I did, but I did, and he promptly sent me to the minor leagues after that.
What was Bobby Clark like? Because I think a lot of us have an image of him. I remember him, Flin Flon Bombers, but not many people go back that far. And then a great NHL career. And, of course, he didn't mind taking out a few Russians. And, all you know, his style. And then as a GM, maybe a little bit abrasive he would come off. What was Bobby Clark like?
I mean, obviously, he's a legend. I'm not going to, you know, talk bad about Bobby Clark. He's done so much for the Flyers organization and so much for, you know, Team Canada and all that stuff back in 72 and everything. Yeah. You know, he was just doing his job. I was damaged goods at that point, and we didn't have a lot of history. And I think, you know, he liked how hard I played and everything, and how hard I was trying to battle to come back from the injury. But I just wasn't... you know, when you only have a small window of opportunity at that level in the NHL, and he kind of saw me as that being passed by, and he brought in other defensemen to replace me. And I wasn't happy, and I told him I wasn't happy, and him and I actually got in a pretty good a pretty good yelling match in his office.
Really? Yeah.
And I didn't back down. He didn't back down, and we kind of both apologized, but we, at the end of the day, he sent me to the minors to, you know, get my knee better and to try to get back to the level that I was at.
But you had some other opportunities in the NHL after the Philadelphia Flyers. How did that all come about?
Right. So after the lockout season, I went down to play in Hershey, Pennsylvania. That's the minor leagues, obviously, with the Flyers. And had a pretty good season down there. They actually made me team captain. And so after that season... You know, I was called up to be a black ace for the playoffs, and they went on a pretty good run. So that was, you know, I was really just wanted to be in there and get in games, and they never put me in. So at the end of that season, I was a restricted free agent, and my agent shot me around to other teams, and then the Winnipeg Jets picked me up, signed me to 2 years.
Right. And just sort of in a nutshell recap, your stay and situation with the Jets, was it up and down with the minors there as well, or all Winnipeg?
No, I made the team out of training camp, and Terry Simpson was the head coach, and, you know, it was the last year, but he knew it was going to be the last year for Winnipeg, so it was kind of a different feel to it. And the fans weren't happy. There was, you know, the stands were only three quarters full. You know, I was in and out of the lineup, kind of playing as a sixth, seventh defenseman, not getting a whole lot of ice time, probably like, you know, between 10 minutes of ice time, stuff like that. So I wasn't really happy in that aspect because I thought I could play more. But again, my knee still wasn't 100%, and I didn't have the jump or the skating ability that I had before, and it probably took another 2 years until that, you know, came back, and then your opportunities kind of out the window. But it was pretty neat, pretty awesome to play with guys like Timu Solani and Keith Tkachuk, and you know, guys like that, Phil Housley, and just some legends on that team.
Right. So Winnipeg then, you know, eventually did move. When Winnipeg got back into the NHL, how did you feel about that? Because you were once part of that organization or part of that community, or was it such a short stay, it didn't really mean that much to you?
I think Winnipeg's a city that just kind of grows on you. It's just, they have a lot of heart, and the city was so sad that they were losing their team. And I don't think it comes around very often where you get that back. And I think they knew what they had lost. And I just thought it was great how I think it's great how the fans have come back and embraced the Jets again.
When I take a look at how you were able to persevere and make the most out of your talent. I look at a guy like Brandon Manning, who has made to the NHL a lot of sacrifices and maybe not the most talent, but his hard work and desire has got him to the NHL level. And he's had a little bit of up and down and all of that. Do you hear that comparison? And he's from Prince George, you're from Prince George. Do you see why someone like myself would say that's the comparison?
Well, I mean, 100%. I don't. A lot of people don't know this, but once I was done my hockey career, I had a bit of I had a training. I used to train kids in the summer, and Brandon was one of the first kids that I trained, and he was, I believe, 14 years old, 13 or 14 at the time. I trained him and Sammy Muchella.
Oh yeah,
and they were just small little guys. But I had other guys that I trained that didn't work near as hard as Sammy and Brandon, and I'd always said to myself, if because he worked, Brandon worked so hard, like on and off the ice, and I always said if he could grow, because he was tiny back then, if he could grow with his work ethic, and it was very similar to me because I was a late bloomer, I was tiny at 14 as well, and I just thought if he could grow, he had the desire to do great things, and then he grew and he kept working at his skills, and look where he is now.
Are you surprised that he made the NHL a significant amount of games, considering, you know, he wasn't drafted, all of those things. When he played in the WHL, even played as a 20-year-old, nobody probably thought of him as, you know, an NHL player, but he did. Yeah. He made it. You knew him as a teen. That's hard work. That's what it does. Now, somebody's saying, well, you have to have something more than just hard work, but he was able to do it. Did that surprise you?
No, it actually doesn't, because I coached Brandon as well when I was 17 with the Spruce Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just see the potential, and then he went off to Chilliwack the next year. And he just kept getting better and better. But he made it the hard way. I mean, he was down in the minors, and I know he fought a lot, and he played well, but he also fought to show he had grit. And, I just hope the Oilers, you know, they were winning games when he was in the lineup, and now it seems like he's not in the lineup. He's, you know, kind of a black ace. I hope they give him another chance, because I thought he played really well this year so far.
In terms of your career, you had 144 penalty minutes and 129 NHL games, and that's, you know, kind of stats that Brandon brings in terms of physicalness and toughness and all of those kinds of things. Now, I remember you actually, when you were with the Spruce Kings in your younger days, is actually a skilled player, skilled defenseman that was offensive, that could put points up. Do you consider yourself that way? And at what point did you have to make that transition in order to not necessarily go the skill route, but go the toughness route, because that's the price you were prepared to pay in order to get to the NHL?
Right. That's a pretty good question. Yeah, I mean, when I was with the Spruce Kings as a 17-year-old, I was very fortunate. Grant Williams was my coach, and he put a lot of faith in me. So I played in a lot of positions that he gave me an opportunity to prosper and to, you know, to get my confidence. And then in Seattle, I was kind of known as a point-getting type of offensive defenseman. Yeah. But once you get into the minor leagues and into pro, you realize that everybody has those skills, and you have to, you know, stand out. And I didn't try to stand out really by fighting. I would probably get in two or three fights a year, maybe four, and not do that well, just kind of hang in there. Because, I mean, it was tough. The guys in pro were tough back then. You didn't want to try to make it as a heavyweight, like fighting guys like Domi and Probert, because you didn't come up that way, and you weren't tough enough. You'd get seriously maimed. Mm-hmm. And but I realized I had to be a physical player and finish all my checks, and, you know, and be tough in front of the net and block shots, and to hopefully complement my skill level to try to make it to the NHL.
Any fights that stick out in your mind that you either won or lost, or a combination of both, the toughest guy you fought, sort of, you know, dwell into that a little bit?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a funny story, but it's a learning lesson. My first fight in the NHL was against a guy by the name of Bill Guerin. He played a lot of games in the NHL, obviously. And
he
was
must play a thousand games, Bill Guerin.
Yeah, and he was, I would say, a light heavyweight. He wasn't heavyweight, but, you know, he was a good player as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, big, strong, stocky guy. And I was in Philadelphia at the time. And him and I had been kind of pushing in front of the net, and he knocked my helmet off in front of my own net. And you can't do that in those days. You got to stand up for yourself. So I dropped my glove, And I nailed him right over top the left eye, and I cut him, and I could see the blood, but it almost felt like I was in a movie, almost in slow motion.
Really?
I popped him, but then I didn't keep fighting, and he basically won the fight, and it cut me for a bunch of stitches, and we had a little chuckle in the as we were getting sewn up in the dressing room, but I had to just keep throwing him, not just one punch wasn't good enough. I thought maybe he'd go down after one, but he didn't.
So he was a lot tougher than maybe people would think, because like when I think of Bill Guerin, I think of there's an offensive player, that guy could score goals, get some assists. Fighting doesn't come to my mind right away when I think of Bill Guerin.
No, but if you look him up on YouTube and Bill Guerin fights, you'll see he fought some pretty tough guys and did well.
Right. These injuries that you've had, there's still some today as you approach the magic a year of 50 coming up for you. There's still some injuries that continue to linger with you?
Oh, for sure. I mean, my knee from my injury in Philly is still not 100%. I mean, it's has pain in it every day, and I had, I believe, four surgeries on my right knee that were arthroscopic for cartilage, so that hurts. And I've got degenerated hips. I probably have to get hip replacement at some point. And I lost my hearing from trying to play through concussions when I was called up to the Calgary Flames. I was hit in LA, and again trying to play through concussions, and no one really knew that I had. And next thing I knew, I woke up the next day and I tried to answer the phone, and I had no hearing in my right ear.
And that's still an issue today.
It'll never come back.
Considering all that, and considering everything that you were able to accomplish in the NHL and pro hockey and the recognition, all of that that comes with it, but now knowing there is a price to pay for that, is it all worth it?
100% it's worth it. Because, I'm here today. I can still walk. I can still play with my kids. I can still go and play squash at the gym again with my friends, just a little bit slower. And I mean, it's a little bit of pain here and there is definitely worth the chance to live out my goal and my dream as a young man, and I would never forego forego that.
You had some rivalries, I guess friendly rivalries, I say that, with your brother Kevin. Like he also got fairly high into professional hockey, or a little bit. Sort of talk about you and him sort of growing up and sort of, I don't want to use the word rivalry, but the brotherly thing between the two of you.
Oh, definitely. Friendly rivalries as kids growing up, we were very competitive kids. Didn't matter if it was hockey, lacrosse, basketball, tennis. Every day was a chance to compete. And I really think that had a big bearing on me, going as far as I did in hockey, because my compete level, I had to compete every day at home just to survive.
Yeah.
And, I really thank Kevin for that. We had a lot of fun growing up together and but every day was a competition, and it was, one story that comes to mind. I know I'm probably running a little bit late here.
We got a lot of time.
Okay. For instance, my parents had bought us a ping pong table, I think, for Christmas.
Yeah.
Which maybe not a good idea in the Malgunas household, but so my parents were, so proud of this and brought it down in the basement where we used to shoot pucks and all that stuff. And so there was room down there to play ping pong. And so Kevin and I got into, I think, like a best of nine series, and we came right down to the bitter end, and I ended up losing.
Oh.
And my brother had his hands up. He was the champion, and he got the ping pong paddle right between the eyes. me.
Yeah.
So he went down and he came up and he tried to get at me across the picnic table, and the whole thing folded, broke, and that was the end of the ping pong.
Was it five games to four, or did he beat you five straight?
No, it was 5-4, I believe.
5-4. Oh, yeah.
It was always close games.
Oh, yeah. So I could see it, especially if you lost that ninth game, 21-19. How ticked off were you? Did that one bother you more than when you lost in the NHL games, in the playoffs? Come on. Like, really?
Well, I mean, I think losing is losing, and if you're a competitor, it doesn't matter if you lose in Scrabble or anything. Yeah. It still hurts. You're always trying to be at your best and try to win, but sometimes losing to my brother hurt the most, but we were pretty even in stuff, and that was good.
Right. as a coach, you decided, okay, you also played for a couple of other NHL teams. We'll talk about that, and you went to Europe. But eventually when you realized that you were done as a player, then you decided to go into coaching. Just sort of outline the coaching route that you had, which included the Prince George Cougars as an assistant, which included, you know, PG Spruce Kings, you were there. Sort of delve into now you've become a coach.
Right. Well, I mean, what had happened was I was, my last year in Germany, I had taken a slap shot off the right foot and broke my foot into 10 pieces.
Goodness.
And so I had just had surgery. I was 32 years old. I wanted to try to get back to Europe for one more season. That didn't look like that was going to happen because our team had a pretty miserable year. And if you don't do well in Europe, you don't get other contracts. But so I had put feelers out to try to keep my career going in North America as well. I didn't have an agent at the time. I was starting to get desperate. It was starting to get late in the summer. I even started to send out things just by fax to East Coast League teams. Mm-hmm. To just prolong my career a little bit longer, and nothing came of it. And then I had heard that the Spruce King head coach was coaching job was vacant. And so I called down to the office and I said, like, put my name in the hat, and I got an interview. And apparently I was shortlisted. It was between me and the other gentleman, which I think was Gus Greco.
Gus Greco, yes. Oh, I remember Gus Greco.
And so Gus got the job over me, and I was, I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. And then I actually got a call from Dallas Thompson, mm-hmm. who invited me to come down and interview for the assistant coach of the Cougars. And Don Nackbar, I know he had talked, Dallas had talked to him, and Don put in a pretty good word for me. Because we go way back, Don and I used to actually be an idol of mine, obviously right. playing hockey and yeah. PG. And, I got the job with the Cougars, and that was quite the experience.
Quite the experience with the Prince George Cougars as an assistant coach. Because you were there, what, 3 or 4 years? And
3.5.
3.5 years. And was Ed Dempsey the coach at that time?
Yeah, Ed was the coach at the time, so I was his assistant. And Ed, I believe, only lasted about 8 games into the season, and he was replaced by Lane Lambert.
Right.
And Lane was had been an assistant for a few years in Regina, but he wanted to be head coach, and he was excellent. I learned a lot from him as far as, everything. Lane, he was so smart and so organized, and obviously he's done well. I mean, he's Barry Trotz's sidekick now, and he'll get his NHL shot soon, I'm sure.
Right. So those years with the PG Cougars, there were some struggles. Talk about being with the PG Cougars at that time with ownership, Rick Brodsky, and how that all transpired for you.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things I can talk about, a lot of things I'd rather not talk about. I mean, it was tough, but my main memory is the kids. I mean, we had some fantastic character kids, guys like, Nick Drazenovic and Gardner, and obviously, Mike Foglin, who passed away. That was just a huge loss for us as a 16-year-old there. I just met some unbelievable guys like, Miles Zimmer comes to mind, Eric Hunter, just unbelievable guys. I got to coach Dustin Byfuglien for a year and a half, and obviously turned him into the player he is.
No, but wait, he was an enigma, really. Like,
he was tough to coach. For
yeah.
Sure.
So okay, you say he was tough to coach. In what way? Now I remember watching him, and we were all wondering, and we were head scratching sometimes. We all thought, okay, and the fact he was able to become an NHL star and all of those things. But going back to when he was a Cougar and you were part of that coaching staff, you said he was tough to coach. That wouldn't surprise, I guess, people that knew him well. What made him difficult?
Well, I mean, what made him difficult was he just didn't take the game seriously. I mean, he was a child in a man's body, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hadn't matured enough to realize what the game could bring him, and he was just too busy into party mode. I mean, and we tried our best as coaches to get him out, to get him into a different mindset. I remember Lane saying to me one day, he said, this kid is going to be the death of me. He said, he's a coach killer. And, you know, I kind of chuckled. And then I said something not very smart in the paper. They got the Brodsky's mad at me. I said, me and Dustin have a love-hate relationship, which we did. I loved the kid one game and then wanted to kill him the next.
Yeah.
But he just, you know, one out of five games, he would play hard for us. And as a coach, you know, we could see so much more. And he just, at that point, wasn't capable mentally of bringing anymore.
So he's had a lengthy, successful NHL career. Is that, in your mind, maturity kicking in? How does that, how do you think that transpired?
Honestly, I think what transpired was he played 1 year in the minors, and I believe he was sent to the minors again and then called up, and I think he saw the difference between paychecks and realized that, you know, I'd like to have a nice cottage on the water or even own own a lake, which I think I heard he does now. And I think he saw the difference and decided I better, if I can do this, if I maybe get my stuff together. And, you know, he just matured maybe at that point and said, I'm going to actually try to do this for a few years and see what happens.
So you could see, because of his size and his strength and his shot, which was nobody wanted to block that shot, he had the tools to become an NHL player. You probably knew that right away.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I used to play one-on-one with him, just keep away in before practice and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was in good shape then. And he would just throw me around like a rag doll. He could take the puck as a 19-year-old from behind his net and backhand it over the glass on the other side.
Ooh.
I'd like to see anybody try to do that in Prince George.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, just his strength and just so how naturally talented. And just, I mean, his shot was just all natural.
Yeah, it was like, no, and that was true. Nobody wanted to block that shot.
No.
It was. So, you know, he started making it as a forward and then eventually came back to his comfort zone as a defenseman, and you know how the Hawks used him win their championship and all those kinds of things. So I guess as you look back, and all of these hockey things, you see some guys that you either coached or played with or whatever, some that have gone on really successful, some that haven't and all that. I guess that's part of the hockey culture. You look back and you say, wow, yeah, that guy made it or that guy didn't. You must have a lot of reflections like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I only coached, I guess, four or five seasons in junior with the Spruce Kings and the Cougars. And, you know, so not didn't have a whole lot of guys go to the NHL. Obviously, Dustin was one that comes to mind, and obviously Brandon. But, yeah, Lane and I both said that Dustin would never play one game in the NHL.
Really?
So he proved us wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So you coach with the Cougars and the Spruce Kings. You never really got... You never really got a shot as a head coach. Did you deserve it in your mind? Is that what you thought? Did you pay your dues enough? Is that something that was a strong desire of yours? Did you think one day you would get it? Put that in perspective.
Yeah, I think at the time, you know, at the time when I first started as an assistant coach, coming right out of playing pro, I think you think that you could be this fantastic coach and everybody thinks that they know the game, but it's just so different articulating it to players because it doesn't, you know, just flow easily in your mind. I mean, I remember the first time Ed was still coaching and he asked me, he said, Stu, can you show the guys how to do a pressure penalty kill on the board?
Yeah.
It was the first time I'd ever been in front of the guys doing this. And I knew in my mind exactly how I want it to go, but articulating that as X's and O's, I failed miserably. And, I mean, I think I walked out of that meeting and I was sweating and I'm just going, I just can't believe how difficult this is. And I got better and then I got more confident. And as I ended up, you know, with the Spruce Kings organization as an assistant coach, I really had high hopes to be promoted to, you know, head coach there eventually. But it didn't look like that was going to happen. It just looked like Ed, you know, was kind of going to be there forever. So I started looking at other opportunities in business and so on and so forth, and ended up getting out of the junior hockey coaching ranks.
Yes, and of course that was Ed Dempsey with the Spruce Kings after Ed Dempsey had been with the PG Cougars. You're listening to Cat Scan. It's brought to you by Prince George Office Systems, custom business solutions for your print, scan, and copy needs on the corner of 5th and George. Stu Malgunas, after a professional career, coaching career, you decided, you talked a little bit about coming back, being at home, which is Prince George, and getting into business. How's that transition been from hockey being your life to now business outside of hockey?
Right. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity of running the Husky Travel Center, Husky Truck Stop, kind of fall into my lap because I had an next-door neighbor that said the position was open. And I wasn't happy with the Spruce Kings at the time, and I had some other business things going on that I was pursuing. But the Husky thing kind of fell in my lap, and it's been 11 years now, and it's been, you know, the first couple of years was tough. I mean, for sure, just there was a huge learning curve, and just to get the respect, it took a while to get the respect of the employees, because, you know, my wife and I run it, and, you know, we didn't know anything at the time. It took us a while to get that respect, but now that it's been 11 years, it's going great, and it gives me a lot of free time, you know, to spend with my kids, and it gave me a chance to coach my daughter, actually, to two Bantam titles in Prince George, and I'm really proud of that as well.
Did that help getting into business when you're a rookie, but the fact that you were so well known in your hometown and you'd made the NHL and all those kinds of things, did that help give you some credibility in the business world, or would you say that's not necessarily related?
No, actually, I think the interview that we had with Husky, it really helped, because they were looking for someone that knew how to work in a team atmosphere. And also, I had started with Dan Hamhuis. We started the Smithers Hockey School from scratch, and my own hockey school here in town that I had started from scratch. So, you know, you have to have some type of business acumen to do that, because that's a fairly daunting task to start from scratch. And so that was, they said, one of the biggest things that helped me in my interview to get that job.
Right. So you've had a chance, you know, you mentioned coaching your daughter and girl. What about the differences in coaching young females compared to coaching males?
That again, you talk about a learning curve. That was a definite learning curve. But, you know, we were fortunate enough to, you know, the coaches that I was coaching with, we had some real good athletes and some real focused girls.
What age was this?
I started coaching my daughter, I believe, in Pee Wee.
Right.
And right up until midget when she was done. And my other daughter is a volleyball player, so I don't know much about volleyball.
Right,
so yeah. She didn't want to play hockey, but the oldest one went all the way through and got a scholarship, and, you know, really, really proud of both my kids. But girls, one thing about girls is they're going to tell you, you tell them something, they're going to absolutely do it. They're going to do it to a T. So power play was always difficult, because on a power play, you have to kind of improvise.
Yeah.
You have like a setup, so you go into the diamond or something like that. You have to improvise, but they couldn't figure out, like, it was just all X's and O's, and they would tell you exactly. We'd tell them what to do, and they do it. But if there was someone in the way, they'd still pass it right on the other person's tape. They couldn't improvise. So that was just one of the differences.
Right, yeah. So I guess there's a lot of things there. You talked about the fact that...
And you can't yell at them. You can't yell at girls, because they'll just cry.
But
you have to treat them.
That must have been an adjustment, because you're a very... You would say you're a very emotional guy.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, and that's, you know, I had quite a few emotional speeches. The girls used to laugh at me when I'd come in the dressing room after we won the championship, and I'd shed a few tears, and they always kid me about that.
Yeah. Any coaches that either delivered an emotional speech, or any coaches that stick out in your mind that really helped your career above others, or that, you know, you look back and say, that's the guy, or that was the guy that gave the speeches, or that's the guy that really set me off on my career, that left more of an impact than anybody else that was behind the bench?
Right. I actually have two. One would be Grant Williams, for sure.
Really?
I know Grant's a fairly polarizing figure in Prince George.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that, again, you know, love Grant or you hate him. But, you know, I'm happened to be one of the guys that he did a heck of a lot for me in my career. I had him in midget as a 16-year-old, and then with the Spruce Kings when I was 17. One quick story about Grant, and then I'll move on to my other coach. Yeah. I actually, we played in the Max tournament when I was 16, and
That was in Calgary.
That was in Calgary, and it was one of the first times that a team from Prince George had been in the MAX tournament. And you have to realize that we were just a Prince George team. It wasn't like the Caribou Cougars, where right. it's, you know, a Northern All-Star team where they, you know, can compete. But we were doing well, and we had a chance to play in the quarterfinals against a team called the Chicago Young Americans.
Right.
And you could probably look that team up. There'd probably be guys that have gone on to, I think Tony Amonte might have been on that team, but we had no business being in the same rink with these guys. And it came third period, and they pulled away from us, and they scored the clinching goal. And one of their players came by our bench, and he was on one leg doing the old pumpernickel. Right,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Bench.
Yeah, the old Bernie Nichols.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that didn't sit too well with me. Oh. And I was actually on the bench, and, you know, this is, you know, not proud of this, but it's something that happened. And so he came right by our bench within pretty close enough that I hit him as hard as I could off from the bench with a left hook, knocked him out.
Oh.
And it started an ensuing line brawl. Mm-hmm. And I was kicked off the bench by Grant and kicked out of the tournament. And that was it for me. We ended up losing. And Grant came in, and I was just going, what did I just do? I've just wrecked my hockey career. Grant's going to kill me. And he came into the dressing room, and he did give it to me in front of the players, and basically saying that, I don't know if you're going to be on this team anymore. And I was just about ready to cry. And he kind of turned, and so no one else could see it, he gave me a little wink.
Yeah. Well, Grant was that tough guy.
Grant was a tough man.
Like, when he played with the Mohawks and New Westminster Bruins and all that, he probably thought, and I don't want to ever put words in his mouth, but he probably thought, boy, Malgunas did what I wanted to do when that guy came by, but I'm a coach, so I can't really play that role.
Well, I don't think I could play that role either, but, you know, luckily I got away with it. I obviously, you know, was kicked out of the tournament, and but I thought I was going to be kicked off the team, and Grant actually came and said later that it was one of the best things he'd ever seen, but don't tell anybody.
Right, yes.
So he really helped me a lot. And then the other coach would be Barry Melrose.
Oh, right, okay.
And he was an old school coach, but I was with Barry my first year in Seattle, and then for 2 years in Adirondack, and he was my mentor, I like
really?
To say. Just he took a shine to me because he liked guys that worked hard and guys with grit. And he was hard on me at times. I mean, to the point where it was probably the toughest coach I ever had. But he got the best out of us, and we ended up winning a Calder Cup in 91-92 with the Red Wings. With
he's
him.
Gone on to have a very successful broadcast career,
right.
ESPN. They look for him as the expert analyst. When you see him do that role, what do you sort of think? Yeah, I knew he'd do well that, or you sort of say you should be coaching?
Well, I think, you know, he tried to come back a few years back and coach in Tampa, and I think the game had passed him by. I think a lot of the old school tactics just don't work with the new players. It's just, you know, I don't know why that is. It's just, I don't know if it's they're softer. They're not used to being yelled at home. They're not used to being kicked in the ass type thing. But I don't know if he could make it in this day and age as a coach.
What do you think about what's happening with coaches right now? Guys losing their jobs, guys under scrutiny because of things that happened in the past or things they've said in the past. And how do you look at some of this that's been going on right now? And coaches have to be very careful in what they say and how they approach things now.
Well, I just don't know where it ends. I just, you know, I look at Mark Crawford, who you've got a guy it's an idiot like Avery, who nobody has any respect for, and he's allowed to say something years in the past, and all of a sudden the coach might not have a job. I don't think that's fair. Where does it end? I mean, I have coaches that have done terrible things to me, but I'm not going to come out of the woodwork and say this guy did that, this and that, and try to get wreck somebody's life. I mean, coaches are in a tough spot right now. You can't do anything. You apparently can't even go out to the pub and have a beer and not get in trouble for it.
Fortunately, Mark Crawford is going to be coming back. They've announced.
Well, that's good.
You know, as an assistant coach. Anyway, you scored one NHL goal. I want to know who that was. with, who that was against, and tell us the circumstance and how memorable is that?
Right. I always say, you know, if you're going to score one, I guess the next big one is 50. I probably never was going to score 50. So I got the one out of the way. I was against the Ottawa Senators. I believe it was against Craig Billington, but okay. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. It's still up on my wall at home. And
you were with who at the time?
I was with Philly at the time,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, every game was big for us that year because, you know, we were in and out of the playoffs, never did make the playoffs, you know, but, you know, under a lot of pressure. I just got a pass from someone on the right point to the left point and just walked in and wired a slap shot between the legs. And it was in the spectrum and just put my arms up and just kind of said, wow,
yeah.
Thank God it's out of the way.
Getting the first and what turned out to be the only NHL goal compared to the first NHL game that you actually played?
I think maybe along the same lines. It's just a wow moment in your life, you know, something you've strived for. But, you know, more in the moment than the, you know, stepping your first time on the ice, because more in the moment, because, you know, you're trying to win that game, and it was a decisive goal in the game. So
you talked about your NHL career earlier, and that was when you were with the Flyers and the Jets. But you also played for the Capitals and for the Flames, a little brief with Calgary. Just sort of tell us highlights there of being with those two NHL organizations.
Right. So what happened with me was in Winnipeg, the team was struggling. And I believe in February I was traded to the Capitals, where I was sent down as to be a depth player with the Capitals. And that was kind of how the rest of my career went, as a depth type defenseman. And you never want to be known as the depth guy, because
right.
It's a tough life going up into the NHL and then back down, and you never know where you're going to be. And you know, it was tough, but I mean, you know, I got to meet Barry Trotz. He coached me for, I believe, four years down in the minors in Portland, Maine, up and down with Washington. And kind of a funny story about him. I mean, Barry's a great guy, but I honestly didn't see him making it as an NHL coach.
Yeah. Here he is. He's
so
been one of the successful.
Now he's going to be maybe one of the best ever. He was very focused and very detail-oriented, but as you talk about, like, pregame speeches and stuff, it was very dry. He wasn't a motivator.
No, he wasn't a rah-rah.
No, not at all. But, you know, I mean, it's great that what he's done, because he's a great family man and everything, but I just...
And look, you know, what he did. You know, I got the cup, and then he goes to the island. Look at the success they've had with, some would argue, maybe limited talent. You know, so he's had a lot of success there.
Well, for sure. I mean, he's done great wherever he's gone. When he ended up going to the expansion Predators, yeah. I was, you know, in the minors at that point, and I was, you know, really close to being drafted in the expansion draft. Yeah. Andrew Brunette was the guy they took instead of me. But he's done great. I mean, I'm just so proud of Barry. But a lot of us guys at that point that were being coached by him didn't think he was the best coach. Well, so it's pretty ironic.
Yeah. What about with the Flames?
With the Flames, I ended up, after the Capitals, I held out for a contract because I wasn't happy how they were treating me, because I was just sick of going up and down in the minors and thought I should be on the team. Everybody thinks there sometimes should be places that maybe that just can't happen. But I was on a two-way contract, so I would go to camp in Washington, have a great camp, and because of my two-way contract, I would always get the short end of the stick. So I ended up holding out, and I signed in the IHL in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I ended up making the All-Star game there in the I. And halfway through that season, Washington still held my rights, so they traded me to Nashville. Maybe probably doesn't hit the stats. So they traded me to Nashville. So I was on Nashville's list for 2 days, and they tried to send me down. It was David Poile, who had been with Washington. He thought I was the depth guy again.
Right, yeah.
And so they tried to send me down. And Calgary was struggling at the time, and they needed a defenseman, so they picked me up on waivers. So I was on my way to Milwaukee, which is Nashville's farm team, and I got the call. Yeah. I don't know how. Somehow I had a cell phone. It must have been a flip phone back then.
I still have a flip phone.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, I'm the only guy left in Prince George with a flip phone, but I still have it.
I think it was one of the first cell phones, so I got the call that I was headed back to the NHL in Calgary, and I was just so delighted. So I got to Calgary and I played four games under Brian Sutter. This is when the Flames were, you know, really struggling. And then I actually went to Calgary and I had been concussed in Salt Lake City. Didn't really tell anybody. And I like I told you, I tried to play because I knew this was going to be one of my last shots to get back to the NHL. And I wouldn't advise anyone to try to play through a concussion because bad things can happen. So I was on the ice in L.A. in the L.A. the new L.A. Staples Center, and a guy by the name of Ian LaPerriere,
he was
a solid, solid guy. Him and I collided at center ice, and everything went black, and that was I had vestibular nerve damage in my right ear, plus a concussion, and that was the end of my season.
How were you able to disguise a concussion? Like, how were you able to fool the coaches, the medical staff, all of the? You had concussions. How were you able to sort of get away with it? I don't think they would today.
Well, they didn't really know me. You know, when you have a concussion, you just feel sick. You feel lethargic. You have a headache. You feel dizzy. And I knew this was my last crack, kick at the can, and I wasn't about to tell anybody how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm. So you were able to...
I played well when I was there. I was actually, the coach told me how well I was playing going into the LA game and said, you're going to try to get you more ice time.
Yeah.
And then, boom.
Yeah. And the concussions, they haven't come back? Like, you don't get dizziness, these spells today or anything like that?
I still have some issues. You know, as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's because of concussions, but I've actually had, you know, some panic attacks.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's just getting older or if it's something that's not quite right in my brain. I was actually in the hospital, in emergency a few months back, having a panic attack for no apparent reason. So, you know, who knows it could be something lingering from that.
Right.
It's not a good feeling.
As you approach 50s, you get into your 50s, what's your future? What would you like to do? Now, you mentioned you're still with Husky. You had a pizza business for a while, brief time, slice of pizza. That was successful, but then you decided to sell that. Is there some business adventures you want to be involved in? Is there hockey you want to be involved in? What are you doing today, and what do you want to do going forward?
I just want to live. I just want to have fun. You know, my family and I just recently moved up to the Aberdeen Golf Course, and we bought a house out there. And so, you know, we do a lot of golfing and we've got a place out at Clucas Lake in the summer. So we try to have as much fun as possible. You know, if things are kind of up in the air with what's happening with Husky right now because they're trying to sell all of the downstream operations. Something's supposed to happen in January. You know, and if we don't have a job there, we'll, you know, we've learned so much that I think, you know, we would try to start another business in PG, but we're definitely in PG for the long haul. You know, as far as coaching, if the right opportunity came up, I mean, I always, you know, it was always one of my goals to coach the Spruce Kings, you know, but I've been out of it for a while now, and, you know, Mike Hossie's done such a great job with that organization, and, you know, maybe down the road a couple of years, maybe I'll be bored, my kids are almost out of the house, and maybe I'll, you know, want to get back a little bit into the coaching, but you know, right now we're just happy where we're at.
But it's very clear listening to you, Stu, hockey is in your blood, and if there is a way to continue, you'd love to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hockey's a passion of mine, obviously, and a passion of everybody's in Canada, most people's. And I mean, the biggest thing about coaching was to maybe make a difference for the players, because I think, you know, I have a lot of knowledge to give from the things that I've gone through, good and bad, in my life. And you know, I think I could pass some of that on to some of the kids to maybe you know, go on and do some good things.
You're from Prince George. It's a real hockey town. I mean, it's been able with the Cougars and the Spruce Kings and Caribou Cougars. I mean, some people always have that debate. How much of a hockey town is it? I've always said it's a big hockey town. There's a little bit of highs and lows. How do you look at your hometown?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't want to be here. you know, I always said I'd marry a Prince George girl. I had girlfriends in Seattle and stuff like that, and I just always knew that I would marry a Prince George girl, and apparently a lot of the hockey guys have, if you look, like the Ham Hughes's, and I think Dustin, there's lots of guys, that, Cougars, that have married PG girls, and they're, you know, they're down to earth, and they have a lot of character, and just like our town does. You know, as far as people not coming out and supporting the Cougars, are we going to go there?
Well, I mean, I'm
as guilty as anybody else. It's but for me, it has nothing to do with the Cougars organization. Mark Glamm is a good friend of mine, and I mean, he's as smart a hockey guy as you can get. I mean, they've done a great job hiring him, and if hopefully he stays long enough to implement his plan, and you know, he's got a young team there. But for me, just the game of hockey is, it doesn't, how do I put it? It's not as entertaining as it used to be. Like, where are all the characters? Like, you remember, you'd go to a game and you'd see Dan Ham Hughes take a guy out at the knees, or you'd see Peacock be running around, or guys like Bouk throwing elbows and this and that, and then you'd have the heavyweights.
That's why Gabriel is probably pretty popular, the recent guys, you know, kind of thing, right?
Right, exactly. But for me, as a spectator now, everybody looks like a robot.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody knows the other team's game plan. And it's almost sterile that nobody finishes their checks. There's very few block shots, very few fights. It's, for me, a hard sell to go to get off my couch and go pay $50 to watch that when I sometimes don't, and I don't maybe see the passion that used to be out there on the ice. And I think that's what Mark's trying to bring back. I hope he is.
He's certainly trying that, and I think he's instilled that, and you know, he has the plan that you have to, you know, let it see through and everything like that. But you're right. I think that, you know, sometimes it's a different era in hockey, not just Prince George, but everywhere now.
No, exactly. It's a different era. But I think they've almost taken it a little bit too far.